The following is an interview at WCBS New York with Mordecai Richler, the Canadian author. This was done on December 5th, 1983.
I think the best way to start is to ask you, just to give me kind of a nutshell about yourself and your background. I have a perspective of who you are and what you've done.
Well, I'm 52 years old. I come from a Jewish working class area in Montreal. I left Montreal when I was 19 and lived in Europe for 20-odd years, mostly in London. We were in London for 18 years. And we returned to Canada in 72, and I've been in Montreal ever since.
Why did you go to Europe? You went to England, is that right?
Yeah, well, at the time, in the early 50s in Canada, it seemed if you wanted to write, you had to get out. It seemed like a very narrow and parochial society at that time. The standards weren't very high, and I felt if I was going to be a writer, I had to prove myself either in London or New York, and I chose London. And, I was in Paris for 2 years before going to London. That was a marvelous time to be in Paris. There were a lot of American writers there on the GI Bill at that time. And ultimately, I decided I had to come back. I'd written about five or six novels, and I felt I could not write any more fiction in England, that I had to return to Canada.
The fiction that you wrote while you were living in London, did it have a Canadian, obviously it had a Canadian perspective, but your locales, your characters?
Yes and no. I mean, the last novel I wrote in London was a novel called St. Urban's Horseman, in which a very large chunk was set in London, and in which there were some British characters. But I was beginning to run into problems. Naipaul once put it very well. He said, I don't know what an Englishman does when he goes home at night. And if, unless you've been brought up in a society, and you know, I mean, very banal things that a novelist has to know, like the price of a haircut and who are the sports stars of the period and what the songs were and how people felt about things and what they ate. It's very difficult because you have to, research such things. They're not really important. But if you don't know them, you haven't got them at your fingertips, it's very difficult. Because after all, that's not really what fiction's about, but you have to have it at your disposal. And so I felt to stay on in England would mean to repeat myself, and so I returned to Canada.
That's an interesting comment. When you're writing about something in the past, even the recent past, you dredge up ideas and sensations in your mind, but specifics are very difficult. For example, say you're putting a novel set in the year 1962.
Yes.
How much was the price of gas?
That's right. Yeah, all these trivial or banal things, you know, must be there, or you must know them. And then the other thing is that I found in London that I moved in a total literary society after a while, and that's very narrow and not really what writing is about. It was very good fun, but in Canada, I knew lawyers, I knew plumbers, I knew doctors, I knew insurance salesmen, and it was much more readily available to me as a total society.
When you were living in London, were you doing anything other than writing? Were you financing yourself with
Well,
writing?
No, I wrote. I had a very difficult time to begin with, and I didn't live in great style. But I published my first novel, I guess when I was about 21 or 22. I think I got a £100 advance. But then I began writing for the New Statesman and the Observer and British periodicals as well. And then I also did some film work after a while, and then I became a little more comfortable. But until my novels earned me a decent sum of money, I had to do a lot of other things, but they were all the nature of writing.
What was it like going back to Canada after 20 years as an expatriate?
Well, I had, that's a bit deceptive. I mean, I had been back in the last 10 years at least once a year, usually managing some kind of magazine assignment or finding some excuse to go home. And then by that time, I should say, I was married and had five children. And we went back for a test year in 1968. I went to a university as a writer in residence just to see how the kids would adjust. And they had no problems at all. And I found, you know, there I was at the age of, I don't know, 41 or 42. I'd spent half my life in Europe, and I really hadn't traveled very much in America. So that was a joy. I did a lot of traveling here.
The kids had no problem adjusting to Canada, did you?
Not really, no. No. I think my wife would much prefer to still be in London. And I can't pretend that Montreal, you know, has the things to offer that London does. But it is home.
You said that one of the reasons for leaving Canada was that you thought it was parochial. I don't know if you use the term provincial, came through. What's it like now?
Well, there's been a remarkable swing of the pendulum almost too far, in that we're now going through a period of cultural nationalism. If when I started out, it was assumed that you couldn't possibly be a writer if you were a Canadian, now merely to be a Canadian makes you a writer. So there are a lot of inflated reputations there and a certain amount of nationalist cultural nonsense being talked. On the other hand, there are some very talented people. I mean, there's Robertson Davies, and there's Alice Munro, and Margaret Atwood, Margaret Lawrence. So there's some very good people about it. So and the climate has changed, and there's some very reputable publishers and some good book pages in various publications, newspapers.
The French separatism, has that made things more difficult in terms of writing?
Not in terms of writing. It's made Montreal a rather unpleasant place at the moment. Montreal was once the most cosmopolitan and charming city in the country, with a wonderful feel to it. And now a lot of English-speaking people are leaving. Certainly the young people are leaving. They no sooner graduate university than they're off to Toronto or the States. The families are being split up, not because separatism is a real threat, but there have been some rather repressive language laws brought into Montreal. And as a consequence, many head offices have left the city as well, because Montreal was the city of head offices. And these things will never come back, so the city is to some extent dying. It's rather sad.
You write in English. Have you ever felt a feeling of discrimination living in Quebec?
I wouldn't say, you know, it's not Belfast. I wouldn't say discrimination, but there is discrimination. I mean, I don't feel there'll be opportunities for my children in Montreal, even though they're bilingual. It's not sufficient any longer to be bilingual. It's a tribal quarrel, and so you should have a French name. And it's becoming more of a French provincial city than the grand place it once was. Newspapers, English-speaking newspapers have folded. The Montreal Star is no longer there. Magazines have left. And it's people leaving and coming back for weddings and funerals.
The publishing houses, this your latest book, The Anthology of Humor, published by Knopf, published, I would assume, simultaneously in Canada, is there?
Yes, but by a Canadian publisher in Canada. It's by McClellan and Stewart in Canada. McClellan and Stewart is far away the leading publisher in Canada, and it's run by a man called Jack McClellan, who's a very vibrant and intelligent publisher. And he publishes, I would say, a good deal of the best writing in the country, although Macmillan is active there as well.
How do you seek out a publisher? Do you seek out a Canadian publisher and then seek foreign rights, or how does it work?
Well, in my case, as you know, I began, I really began writing in London. In the first instance, I had a British publisher, and then an American, and then afterwards I had Canadian publishers. I didn't have a Canadian publisher to begin with. In fact, when I was a kid, I guess it was an act of defiance that I wasn't going to be published by a Canadian publisher. I'm very happy to be published by McClellan and Stewart now, but at that time, that's the way I felt.
So the initial publisher was Knopf for this book?
That's right, yes.
Do you have
in this case, yes.
Do you have an agent in Canada? Or do you have
I have an agent in New York and an agent in London. There are agents in Canada, but I don't. I mean, Jack McClellan and myself happen to be very good friends, and we settle these things ourselves for a few drinks.
Do you live right in Montreal?
Yes, I do.
What sort of working environment do you have?
Well, we live in an apartment building downtown, right downtown. And then we have a place in the country, in what the eastern townships, which is really just by the Vermont border. We're on a very large lake there. And we spend our weekends out there and the summers, and I go out there sometimes and we'll work for 3 weeks at a stretch.
You said that you came back to Canada at one point as a writer in residence. Are you doing any teaching at all?
No, I'm not doing any teaching at all.
You, of course, are probably best known for the Betty Kravitz novel, which was made into an exceptionally good motion picture. Tell me a little bit about how the musical version of this is developing.
Well, we've been working on it, I guess, for about 18 months. I'm working with an American composer and an American lyricist, with Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller. And we're in the process of casting it now. It will open in Canada in the spring. and go on a 10-week tour, and then we hope come down to New York.
It's hard to imagine a musical out of the story. What musical elements? Can you give us an idea what musical elements will be in it?
Well, I find this
are you doing the lyrics for the musical?
No, I'm doing the book for the musical. Or I've done the book for the musical, and it's very much a communal activity. The three of us work together very closely. Mike and Jerry have written, you know, many famous songs, and we just look for dramatically musical moments, I guess. Inject them into the end.
Let's talk a little bit about humor. And going through the book, it looks to me that as though you have selected a lot of things that weren't aimed at humor as such. For example, Whacking Off by Roth is funny, but I don't know that Roth meant it to be funny. It was.
It's very funny.
It is. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
There is a lot in here that, well, you have excerpts from material that turns out to be very funny, but I wonder if the writer actually meant it to be humorous.
For example,
Perelman always would write in a funny way. He eventually would always write in a funny way. But Naipaul, I don't see him as a humorist.
Well, Naipaul's early collections of stories were all very funny indeed. And, he's now rather more solemn. But those two or three first books were very comic, full of comic invention. And I was looking, you know, for literary humor. And there's a dinner party from Good as Gold, from Joe Heller's novel, which I think, you know, again, is hilarious. But Joe's always been a very funny man, too.
How did you go about selecting these? You go to your library and look at the shelves to say, hey, I remember reading this?
Well, I started off foolishly thinking I had read a lot of humorous material and that it would be something of a breeze doing this anthology, and I found I put in about 2 years reading, really, to get it all together. I wasn't as well informed as I thought. And so, I collected a lot of material, and I went to libraries, and I spent about 10 days going through the New Yorker files here in New York. And gradually it came together. In the anthology, I tried to put the emphasis, really, on people writing in the last 20 or 30 years.
You said something interesting in your introduction, and that dealt with Dorothy Parker and the fact that she's not included. And yet Dorothy Parker, of course, in the 30s, early 40s, one of the funniest writers around. But your comment tended to confirm a belief that I have, that humor often tends to date itself.
That's right. It's very often ephemeral and does date itself, but other people hold up astonishingly well, like Beachcomber, who wrote a column in the Daily Express in London for years, I think, was a very underestimated writer, and in many ways he anticipated evil and woe. I mean, he had, you know, that's humor of character he wrote. And Ring Lardner is still a joy to read. So some people held up very well, and others were dated by the nature of their material.
Is it true that sometimes humor doesn't hold up as well as it might because it's so topical?
Yes, absolutely. It's, you know, very often involved with today's headlines and the fevers, which are not necessarily tomorrow's. So, yes, it is a problem.
You said something also very interesting, that as you gathered the material for the anthology, that you found very little funny writing by fascist and communist. What did you mean by that?
Well, I meant people with very solemn political obsessions or dedication do not tend to see the humorous side of things, and they just lack that quality.
Are you saying that humorists are just not committed people?
Well, they're committed, but well, I mean, what they're most aware of is human folly, and they aren't informed by a sense of political mission at all. Not given to that kind of foolishness.
There's a difference, though, isn't there, between a humorist and someone who has written humor.
Mm-hmm. Well, we could say Russell Baker or Art Buchwald are humorous per se, but there's a story in there by John Cheever which I thought was very funny, and there's a correspondence between Marion Moore and the Ford Company, again, which is rich in humor. And I, You know, I did include a number of satirical novelists as well.
In addition to the, let's just look ahead for just a moment, in addition to the musical version of Duddy Kravitz, what's going to be the title?
Duddy.
Just Duddy?
Yes.
What lies ahead for you? Can we expect more literature from you in the future?
Well, I have a book of essays about Canada coming out from Knopf in the spring. And now I'll be getting on with a new novel, because it's been some time since I published my last novel, I think, in 1980. I would really, you know, much prefer to go from novel to novel, but I haven't got that rich an imagination, so I find there are gaps between novels.
Well, Mordecai Richler, I hope that in the spring, when Knopf hopefully will send me a copy of the essays, I'll be able to have you back, and we'll talk more about the literature of Canada and whatever you have to say.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.